Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
I'm Grace Bonney of After the Jump, and you're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's Wednesday, and it's 5:30, not 5 o'clock. We had a little issue with the subway today, but 5:30, we're coming to you live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. If it's 5:30 and it's Wednesday, you're listening to me, Phil Colicchio, bringing you the business of the business, and that is the show here on the Heritage Radio Network, which explores the business aspects of the hospitality industry. And we talk about what's new in the restaurant business, what's new in the hotel business, the resort business, the bar business, all of the hospitality-driven businesses. As we like to say, we're more interested in the price of the garlic than where it goes on the dish. We're here every Wednesday, and if you miss us live, you can go right to our website at heritageradionetwork.org, click on to the icons that bring you to the business archives, and you can get the business of the business 40 or 50 or so episodes that we have done over the past couple of years. We are also available on iTunes. So now that we've got that little business out of the way, let's get you to an update of our business. Every couple of months, we like to dispense with interviewing a guest and bring you current events in the hospitality industry. And today, my associate at Taylor and Colicchio LLP, my law firm, Jasmine Moy, is joining me. Hey, Jasmine.
Hello.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
All right. I rely on Jasmine's good sense, her great contacts in the New York restaurant industry, and her terrific legal work to help broaden our law firm's offerings. And she also assists and has actually created some terrific business deals since she's joined us. So, Jasmine, I want to tell the listeners really what's new on the fronts that you're working on. I know some of the things that you're working on because we're working on them together. But I think it's fair to say that in the last 3 to 4 months, we've seen a tightening of the real estate market here in New York, and that restaurant space is getting more expensive. Am I the only one noticing that?
You are not.
Tell me what you're seeing in that regard.
I mean, in New York, people are moving into the hotel space.
Right.
For sure, just because leases are hard to find.
Right.
And also a lot of mixed-use projects, new mixed-use projects as well. You look at Gotham West, you look down at the Brookfield, just opened Hudson.
The incredible development of Brookfield. I think on one hand, we have to give congratulations to what we all hope is a very successful project with great foresight. On the other hand, you and I have seen some of the leases that have been presented to restaurateurs down there, and they ain't cheap.
They are not.
They're going to have to spend a lot of money. So we're seeing restaurateurs and restaurant investors looking much more carefully at deals right now than they were even 6 months ago.
I would agree.
Seeing the same thing?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's New York, but New York is just one market that we cover. There's been incredible growth in the gaming industry, a big part of the hospitality industry, and East Coast gaming. There are groups wrestling for licenses in New York, wrestling for licenses in Pennsylvania, all because they clearly that there are billions and billions of dollars in gaming revenue that are not being spent in Atlantic City, if you're on the East Coast. But in Las Vegas, food and beverage revenue began to outpace gaming revenue. What are you seeing that's current and business trending in Las Vegas right now?
I mean, for the first time in a really long time, I think people could honestly say that they were going to Vegas for the food.
Yeah.
Just for the food. The most amazing chefs in the world all have spots in Vegas now, at least one, if not multiple.
But it's not just, hey, let's bring a big name chef and slap his name on the door anymore, is it?
No. These are new concepts. You know, chefs are leaving their cities. They're going to Las Vegas and they're opening brand new concepts. They're not just carrying something over. And the concepts are the kind of concepts that now people in New York would love to bring back from Vegas, which is not something that anybody, I think, would have been able to predict ten years ago, for sure.
I think you're right. I think a lot of what I have been seeing when I'm in Las Vegas, when I'm dealing with the vice presidents of food and beverage at the various hotels out there, I'm seeing that there is a movement away from fine dining, which we've seen here in New York and in the East in the last couple of years, and a movement toward things like gastropubs. One of the more amazing numbers that I can report is that Gordon Ramsay, who's clearly one of the world's best known chefs, has a gastropub at Caesars, and that gastropub generated over $18 million in 2013. And that's a pretty amazing number. You see anybody else that are trying to take those types of concepts to Las Vegas or moving them from Las Vegas?
Yeah, well, you know, there's always the accusation that everybody else is a few years behind New York, and I wouldn't say that Vegas is a completely separate story. You know, gastropubs were a thing in New York first, and for a while, but I mean, they've stepped up their game, and also the small plates, certainly in Vegas, is mm-hmm. a whole different thing. And food is also getting really healthy in Vegas as well.
Yeah, that's kind of...
I mean, all these hotels have the most amazing pools. People want to look good by the pools, and the food in Vegas is starting to get not only just very good, but it's getting very healthy at the same time.
And, you know, I think that's a great observation. Not only are the offerings that the hotels are providing to the guests becoming healthier, the offerings that they're actually providing internally to their own staff, it's a much more health conscious Las Vegas than existed even a couple of years ago. You know, but the longer you live, the more you can gamble, right? So that's the that seems to be the thing. Jasmine, I'm again, we get to work together a lot. And one of the things that I know you and I have been wrestling with in the last, you know, again, over the last year, but more and more now, there really does seem to be a tightening of the purse strings as it relates to long-term restaurant investor partnerships. A lot of them aren't surviving the way we expected them to, are they?
No. And, you know, I think that there's a few reasons for that. I mean, I think a lot of chefs, I think with the introduction of a lot of these hotel deals, which give them a lot of freedom, I think a lot of chefs who might have their own restaurant group might be thinking that they have less, what's the word I'm looking for?
Inhibition. Yeah. I think that's less risk.
Yeah, right? You know, exactly. Chef, you know, chefs maybe are not as insistent on being partners or owners as much as they are about be having as much control over the concept as they can, yeah. and having less risk.
Yeah, you know, it's we focus on this so much that sometimes we forget that not everyone is looking at this, this evolution the way we see it, right? Which is really from a business dollars and cents standpoint. And when I say, I don't mean that partnerships are breaking up and fighting. What I mean is that there are many more opportunities now for the talent to do things on their own, mm-hmm. than there have ever been before. And I think you've expressed it correctly. The development of food and beverage opportunities at hotels who can support talent, mm-hmm. Is a big thing. And when you can do one or two of those deals, you can create a bit of a war chest, because most of those chefs, most of that talent, is not required to invest capital in those agreements, but rather, with the support of the hotel food and beverage staff, they are engaged to create, which is really what, you know, that's the ideal world for many chefs. The time that we have spent working on these deals, what we've seen is that the maturity of the documentation now brings a more of a balance, where in the past you would have these very rigid owner will do X, operator will do Y, and very, very rigid delineations. We've seen that become much more relaxed. We've seen ownership actually say in some of these negotiations, hey, we're engaging you for your expertise, mm-hmm. chef and operator. We want that. We don't want to be the guys who are overseeing everything. We want final approval. It's our money. But we don't necessarily want to tweak the menu anymore. And that was always the big concern, right?
Right.
You know, from the creative standpoint. And you're very close to the creative side. And a lot of your colleagues, a lot of your friends are on the creative side. What are they seeing out there? We've got, we got three or four young, talented chefs that probably 5 years ago we wouldn't be representing, because they wouldn't have the wherewithal to engage us, right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah. So let's talk about a couple of people who are bucking that trend. We've been hearing about City Grit and how popular City Grit has been. Tell me what's going on with City Grit.
I mean, you know, that is a kind of fantastic story. She won a contest with Food and Wine Magazine. Used to kind of cook for her friends at home.
Sarah Simmons, right?
And she opened her own place where she cooks sometimes, and then has a lot of a roster of rotating chefs come in from all over the country and all over the world even to cook at her place. But she is actually now opening her own spot, a restaurant, a typical restaurant, you would say, with a menu that is the same every night in the Lower East Side. So she's something similar to the food trucks who have the truck and then move to brick and mortar.
There you go.
She kind of had this, mm-hmm. amorphous space, and now she's moving into mm-hmm. a more traditional restaurant. For several reasons, but clearly the City Grit is like having a special event every night. Right. And so there's something a little more steady and a little more, you know.
And really that's been made
yeah.
possible
yes.
because she took a chance.
Yep.
Social media has played a big part in getting the City Grit vibe mm-hmm. Out there, and lots of people have paid attention around the country.
Mm-hmm.
I know that there are lots of folks who are interested in, I won't say ripping off, but interested in mimicking the City Grit concept by creating environments where chefs from other parts of the country can come and show off their new projects. Now, Not every city in America has the New York media, and then City Grit is a blessing for the New York media, because any chef from any city can wind up here, cook a dish, and our New York press corps can sample it without having to get
yep.
on a plane.
Absolutely.
You mentioned something though, about food trucks, and I wanted to bring that topic up as well. Again, folks, I know a lot of different people listen to the program, different ideas. We've done a show about the food truck world, about the idea that it's sort of not just an afterthought, and it's not just a hipster dream. That it's there are a couple of companies vying to go public that are basing their whole business plan on the food truck boom. Great way to own your own business. Great way to franchise a particular business. We've seen the grilled cheese truck people really make great headway in there. But as a result of that, I've seen another really important piece develop. Auburn University, the School of Hospitality at Auburn University, right now, a couple of their PhD candidates are working on a national health and safety manual for food trucks. There was an article recently in the New York Times about a lawyer, who enjoyed the food truck scene that was trying to create a collaborative amongst food trucks and try to create some regularity in the in the health and safety components. But he's not a scientist. Rather, he's a guy that would accumulate health codes. And there are a couple of people at Auburn University that are creating something that they're hoping they're going to introduce next year as a national model for food truck safety that health officers in different towns can use. Right now, it's very haphazard. The other thing is, of course, the entertainment industry finally picked up on it. There's a movie that's out now called Chef, and it's about that every man chef who is beholden to a bunch of investors who just don't get his genius, and they basically put him out on the street, and he finds happiness in a food truck. Personally, I don't know any chefs who have left restaurants as the really successful restaurants because they didn't like their investors and went out into a food truck. But I'm sure Hollywood is going to make us feel better about that. They're going to make a little more money off the hospitality industry too.
Mm-hmm.
Jazz, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about what we're seeing outside of the hotel and gaming industry, specifically what we're seeing in New York City, since a lot of our listeners seem to come from our area here. So we'll be back after this short break, bringing you up to speed on the business of the business.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Seeing a need to help people sort through all the misinformation about healthy eating, Whole Foods Market added a seventh core value: to promote the health of our stakeholders through healthy eating education. In our stores, we give you the tools you need for choosing the most nutritious foods and healthy recipes, as well as offering classes with nutritionists and cooking coaches to help inspire good health and well-being. Stop by your local store today and learn more about our Health Starts Here program and wellness clubs, or online at wholefoodsmarket.com/healthstartshere.
Hey, we're back after that little interlude. Thanks to the Punch Brothers for bringing us back in with Movement and Location. And you're listening to The Business of the Business with me, Phil Colicchio. We're here every Wednesday. Today I've got my associate with me, Jasmine Moy. Jasmine and I are bringing you the quarterly business update in the hospitality business opportunities. And we started out by telling everybody sort of what we've been seeing in the New York leasing market. We've seen significantly greater expense for space here in the New York area. We've seen growth in opportunities for the talent, meaning chefs and operational talent, because of the prodigious expansion of the hotel industry here in New York. We should probably give a couple props right now to two hotels that really changed the face of a significant neighborhood in New York, and that would be the Ace Hotel and the Nomad Hotel. Because in that general area of New York City, 29th and 30th, around 5th and Broadway, I can't call it a resurgence because I don't think there was ever a surgence. but what I can say is that the incredible amount of development in that area, I believe, is directly attributable to the success of those two hotels and their unique view on hospitality.
I don't think anybody would argue with you about that.
It's it is pretty incredible. And if you're a listener who has not visited the lobbies of those hotels, the restaurant offerings, the cocktail offerings, do yourself a favor. It's where it's at, both from an aesthetic and from a business standpoint in New York. We've also seen, and Jasmine, we can talk knowledgeably about the expansion of the rooftop bar as an economic validator for the hotel industry. Tell me what you're seeing in terms of rooftop bar popularity and money.
I mean, on two fronts. First, everyone loves a place to sit and drink outside, especially in a city like New York, where outside real estate is hard to find. But when you start talking bar as well, your profit margins are fantastic on liquor over food. And so hotels are looking at this as a real moneymaker. You know, if they have the option to build on the roof, it's an asset. It's a real asset.
We've seen a couple of hotels take some really interesting approaches there. We will mention them by name. A hotel on East 28th Street, the Park South Hotel, decided to undergo a renovation, decided to take advantage of the resurgence or the surgence of the area in which their hotel has been for many, many years. And what they decided to do in order to begin their repositioning in the market was to develop, build, and open a rooftop bar. You and I we had the opportunity to work with the Park South Hotel on that and with their new operators, food and beverage operators, Tim Cushman and Nancy Cushman from the brilliant Oya restaurant in Boston. And we've seen spectacular success already up there. A wonderful cocktail program. But what's important about that from our perspective in this show is that the ownership's vision was to begin to drive revenue immediately. And to drive revenue because they're going to have to replace a couple of rooms, mm-hmm. right, on the first floor, what their traditional revenue generators were. But we're seeing hospitality professionals take chances and betting on continued success in the food and beverage industry. So, you food and beverage professionals out there, chefs, bar program, bar directors, beverage directors, sommeliers, get yourselves really familiar with the hotel industry as fast as you can. It is not just the present. It is the future to opportunity. In the East, you're going to get priced out of your restaurant spaces unless you've got significant capital. Significant capital development means giving up an awful lot of control. You can find yourself with the opportunity with long-term contracts where you can make an awful lot of money, and you can have a lot of creative freedom. So you should call Jasmine. If that's you out there, you should reach out to Jasmine or myself. Because we're getting actually inundated with hospitality groups, hotels that are asking us who we can recommend for operation in the city. Jazz, I think we should also kind of take a look more at what we're seeing internationally. There's a great deal of development in London, as you know, and a number of our clients are seeing opportunities in London. Why do you think London has become sort of the go-to city in Europe. It's no longer Paris. It's no longer Barcelona. It's London.
You know, I would say that this is not dissimilar to Vegas in certain respects, but nobody used to think of London as being a place where you would go for food either. And all it takes is one or two.
I think you're
really really great chefs to open a place, and when other people start going to London for that chef's place, other people who know how to cook say, well, they should come visit mine while they're here as well.
I think you're exactly right.
And they flock.
I think you're exactly right. What are the common denominators there? We're business people. The common denominators there are that there are people who have to travel there, and there are people who choose to travel there. Mm-hmm. There are people who have to spend money, and there are people who have, if you have limited places in which you can spend your money, you never see all of that money exploited. And I mean exploited in the most appropriate sense. But when you give the food and beverage buying public a great product and a diversity of product and the ability to spend extra money on it, mm-hmm. if you don't force it down their throats, history is showing us that they're going to support it. And London is I think you hit it right on the head when you compared it to Las Vegas. There's plenty of talent there. There's plenty of new talent there. Like New York, impossible to find a space to open up yourself over there. Things are so expensive. Mm-hmm. But clearly a market for the development of food and beverage concepts from the hotel side and with management agreements and management contracts. Jazz, when you and I work together, one of the biggest things that that we try to deal with at the beginning of a relationship is squaring away the intellectual property of the ownership of the chef. But it's not always the chef that we're worried about. It's the brand. Mm-hmm. I have been, and you have been, seeing in the last, I would say, 3 months, the significance, the importance of protecting that intellectual property. How many challenges to intellectual property of known brands that we work with have you seen in the last 6 months?
A few.
Yeah.
A few.
I mean, at least half.
Unfortunately. I think the problem with that is that intellectual property law is wonky. You know, you and I are lawyers, and we still don't even have our heads wrapped around 90% of what you need to know to be a good intellectual property lawyer.
Well, we do know what we need to know, and that is that Lisa Pironi,
who is the woman to call.
Lisa Pironi, who is of counsel to Taylor and Colicchio, is really the best food and beverage intellectual property lawyer that I've ever come across. We can certainly help anybody in that regard. This is not a promotional pitch, but Lisa's so good that I want to mention her name. But we've seen what can happen.
But these laws are tough. They're hard to understand. They're hard for normal people to understand, much less lawyers understand them. So I think most regular people don't understand how important it is to get the marks registered and to spend the time doing it. And they think
spending the money up front.
A lot of people think I'll do it later, or they don't even know what's the thing that they have to do, and that can be a very costly mistake.
Well, you, the listening public, will be soon hearing of changes to brands that you know and love because their intellectual property was not properly protected at the outset, and they're being forced to change. We've also seen very recently. We've seen the hijacking of intellectual property for gain by larger entities who are trying to make profit, make money, exploiting cultural changes in the United States that have been pioneered by a few of our clients. And I'm going to say the name, Big Gay Ice Cream, here in New York, who did go out of their way to protect their intellectual property, who were careful about it, who were respectful of the laws of the United States. And, you know, even as we speak, their ideas, their designs are going to be the subject of a real wrestling match, because a large national chain has allowed another designer to present apparel that is, in my estimation, an improper taking of intellectual property. So we have to be careful about that. I guess the good news is for groups like that that nobody tries to copy you unless you're successful, unless you're breaking some ground. The bad news is that if you don't spend that little bit of money early, owners, operators, chefs, people who have brand ambitions, spend the money. All right, spend the money on the artwork, spend the money on the graphics, spend the money on the lawyer, all right, who can help protect you. Because worst thing in the world that I can think of is working for 10 years on your brand and then find out that you really don't own it, you know, or that somebody else can take it from you. You know, we're lucky enough, Jasmine, to practice in New York, where we get to see so much, so much that is groundbreaking. Some of it works, some of it doesn't work. But we've also really been seeing growth in cities that surround New York. We're seeing enhancements in Jersey City. We've talked at length about the great things happening in Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
We've had Kevin Spraga, who is doing terrific new things in Philadelphia, breaking new ground. What we've seen in Philadelphia has been the beginnings of Hotel F&B bringing in not rock star chefs, regional chefs. Which is, to me, like the smartest thing that you know, that a hotel outside of one of the top two or three cities in the U.S. can do. We're seeing that as well. So it seems like if we're focusing a little bit heavily on the incredible growth in the food and beverage aspect of the hotel industry, well, it's because that's really where it's happening. That's where attention must be paid. If this component of the industry interests you. So I think we've done our service announcements today, Jasmine. We've brought the public, the listening public up to speed in what's going on in the industry. We did not touch today, because we are going to have guests in the next couple of weeks, on the resort industry, which is, I can't say that it's booming, but I can say that it's growing. We've talked in the past about the yachting industry and the cruising industry. We're going to talk a little bit more about that, the business side of that, the business opportunities that exist there. And I think we're also going to get just a little more ingrained in some of the new technology that's giving consumers a lot more power in the food and beverage industry. So for today, I think we can release the general public, Jasmine, and have them think about some of the opportunities that exist out there. Before you go, I don't do this every week, but this week it seems appropriate. If any of you hospitality professionals would like to talk more about business opportunities that exist, both from the side of operators and from the sides of owners, please reach out to us. Phil Colicchio, Taylor and Colicchio, and that's P. Colicchio, Colicchio, at TCS Lawyers, or Jasmine Moy.
J. Moy at TCSLawyers.com.
Yep. We can usually give you a pretty good idea of what to expect when you are embarking on a career or on a career change in this industry. So for today, Phil Colicchio signing off with the business of the business, Jack Inslee making sure that we're doing it right out there in the engineering booth. How'd we do, Jack? Thumbs up, says Jack. All right, see you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.